everyone. Welcome to Talk Nerdy. I'm your host, Kara Santa Maria. And I want to go ahead and thank today's sponsor. Today's episode of Talk Nerdy is brought to you by the recording artist J.S. Onka. To download his new EP called EP1, visit www.jsonka.com. That's J-S-O-N-C-A.com. You can also not just download the new PE, you can pre-order these tracks on black or limited edition color vinyl right there on the site. Now, EP1 was written, performed, recorded, and mixed, all of the above, by J.S. Onka, and it features a blend of Indian classical, West African folk, and contemporary Western music. And it's even got this instrument called a zarod, which is like an electric guitar blended with a special Indian classical instrument called a sarod. Very cool stuff, guys. You've never heard anything like it. So don't wait. Go to www.jsonka.com to support this amazing artist and download EP1 today. That's www.jsonka.com. I also want to thank those of you who supported the podcast in the many ways that you do this week. I want to thank those of you who visited the Talk Nerdy online store at www.carasantamaria.com. I want to thank those of you who listened, shared links, rated, reviewed on iTunes, on Stitcher, and just all the different ways that you kind of show the Talk Nerdy love. I really, really appreciate it. And I specifically want to give a shout out here to... let's see, Catherine Colamarino from Clearwater, Florida. Thank you for donating to the podcast there by clicking the PayPal button on my website. I want to thank Giovanni Morales from Long Beach, California for an incredibly generous donation. Thank you so much, Giovanni. I want to thank Francisco Jimenez from Riverton, Utah. I also want to thank William Dehapart, I think that's how you'd pronounce that, Dehapart maybe, from West Newton, Pennsylvania. I want to send a big thank you to Rick Richardson from Elma, Washington. Also a thank you to Ravis Pinnett from Hillsboro, Oregon. I want to thank Chris Michael, I think it's Michael, maybe Makel, from Sagal, Indiana. And I want to thank Sean Johnson, another incredibly, incredibly generous donation from Sean there in Mountain View, California. And lastly, I want to thank those of you who have recurring payments set up through that very same button. They come in monthly or weekly, however you have it set. So this week, I want to thank Jake Krog. I want to thank Ryan Langford. I want to thank Chris Lloyd. And lastly, I want to thank David Urich. And I specifically have a question for you guys and anybody listening who has thought about helping to support the podcast in the past. I've been thinking lately about perhaps starting a Patreon account, which Patreon is really interesting because it's kind of like these PayPal donations meet Kickstarter, but instead of funding like one big thing, like a documentary or a video game launch, you fund individual artists for making ongoing stuff. So maybe a comic book artist or somebody who does YouTube videos. Or for example, myself, I do Talk Nerdy. I do it all by my lonesome and you guys support it. And it's really huge because it is a free podcast to download for anybody who wants to. I, of course, know that many, many people out there, you know, they're not in a position to be able to support the podcast financially, and I totally appreciate the support that you give to it in the many ways that you do. But those of you who have kind of shown your support by helping fund the podcast in the past, check out Patreon and tell me what you think. Hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on Facebook. You know, I'm at Kara Santa Maria on Twitter. And I'm facebook.com/sciencekara. I would love to hear your two cents and tell me if that's something you would be into. Apparently, you can't do one-time payments on it, so I'd probably still keep up that PayPal button. But it is a really cool way to support with recurring payments because there's like a built-in community. I can give you guys extra content, freebies from, you know, from time and again, and I can also kind of interact with you there through the Patreon interface. And also, oh, I can list what kinds of things the donations go toward. Like, for example, if you noticed last week on my episode with Dr. Don Johansson, the microphone work was not amazing. My microphones are incredibly directional, which is great because they cut down on ambient noise, but they also make it really hard to pick up somebody's voice if they're maybe a little soft-spoken or if they meander away from the microphone a bit. And so I'm thinking that it might be time to invest in some like condenser mics so that that isn't a problem anymore. And of course, I'm still building up towards the laptop fund, even though my sweet old 2008, I think it is, maybe 2009, MacBook Air, she's still hanging in there. So we'll see if I can't get a little more mileage out of her. Anyway, just throwing it out there. It's a thought that crossed my mind. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. That being said, I guess it's time to start the show. I'm super pumped about this episode because I finally got to sit down with the last member of the Nerd Brigade, Miss Allie Ward. And just in time for Valentine's Day, too, she has got some really great stories about kinky stuff that happens in the insect world. If you don't know Allie, she is the host, or the co-host, I should say, of Unique Sweets and Trippin' Out with Allie and Georgia, both on the Cooking Channel. She's also a contributor to CBS's Innovation Nation, which airs Saturday mornings on CBS. I just said that. CBS. Yep. And she has her own podcast called Slumber Party, and it's hilarious. You guys are going to love her. So here she is, Allie Ward. Allie.
Hi, hi.
My hoodie's stuck on my microphone.
You're screwed.
What am I doing?
You should quit life.
I'm super stinky because I was at the gym earlier. And actually, when I say earlier, it was like I was at the gym like 6 hours ago and I'm still wearing my like dirty gym clothes.
No, it's fine. That's what they're for. Sometimes you sleep in them and then you wake up and you're like, I'm ready to work out again.
There you go. It's motivation. Except I could never sleep in a sports bra. It's all like inchy.
You know why? Because you have boobs.
I do have boobs. That's true. I would love to not have to buy the one that says maximum support. That would be ideal. Like, because the ones that always say minimum support are like really cute.
Yeah.
And the ones that say maximum support look like they're for like old ladies.
No, I know. There are drawbacks.
There are bonuses. So I was saying, look at my new horseshoe crabs.
Aren't they pretty? So dope. I'm looking at it and I'm like jealous and proud of you at the same time.
Thank you. I'm gonna tweet about them so that people can see a picture of what I'm talking about right now. I got them at Goldbug. I love Goldbug.
Of course, yeah. It looks like a Goldbug offering.
Yeah. These behind me. I'm like into art right now. I got these beautiful prints that are called Death by Cat. Oh. And it's this artist, and I can't remember his name, but I'll look it up. And he is a commercial photographer. So, you know, he takes pictures of like, I don't know, soup cans or like paint cans or something.
Uh-huh.
But he has like 30 feral cats around his property. Yeah, something crazy. Like, I think he lives out in the woods or something. And they leave him gifts. And then he takes photographs of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Aren't they pretty?
Yeah.
I mean, they're super morbid because it's like dead birds. But
I feel like the artist's name should just be Mr. Whiskers.
Like, these are from Mr. Whiskers. Well, this one's from Mr. Whiskers. And this one over here is from Tickles.
They're gorgeously photographed mutilated birds. And that's a hard sentence to say earnestly.
I figured you would appreciate.
I do. I really appreciate the beauty in biology. That's what I love so much about it, I think.
And that's what I love so much about, well, it's one of the things I love so much about you. So for everybody who's listening, Allie Ward, she's the last of the Mohican Nerd Brigade.
Am I the last to be on?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
You just made a face.
Oh, when I was waiting to figure out what noun you were going to be using. She's the last.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell if it was because your tea was gross.
No, this tea is gross. It's garbage water, but I'm continuing to drink it.
It's warm.
It's roasted garbage water.
Mmm. Delicious. We highly recommend the coffee shop by my house.
No bueno. But yeah, I'm the last one on.
You're the last of all of the Nerd Brigade. We've even had some kind of nerds in residence before you. I had Brian Switek and Costa have been on.
I know. I listened.
So I'm very glad.
No, I'm nervous to be on. I think you've mentioned it a couple times. And every time you mention your podcast, I just disappear behind a ficus. And I'm like, just keep talking and just don't notice I'm gone.
Which is so funny to me because you have a podcast and your podcast is hilarious.
Why, thank you. Thanks.
And you do your podcast in a teepee.
Yeah, it's called Slumber Party with Allie and Georgia. It's on Feral Audio. And We record in a pillow fort or a teepee that I put up in my living room, and our guests come up in pajamas, and then we talk about everything from like one thing you learned that week to things you love, things you hate, midnight snacks, anything on the internet that you're crushing about. So it's like a slumber party.
Do you ever do it though at like 10 a.m.?
Of course. Yeah, and it's weird. But we just
You just don't take your PJs off then.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, we had a guest we were really excited about named Tony Hale just came on, and I was so nervous. He's he played Buster in Arrested Development. He's on
Oh, very cool.
So he was coming to my house, and I was so nervous, and I woke up at like 7 in the morning to start tidying and, you know, like lighting an expensive candle. And he got there. I was still in my pajamas.
But did he come in his pajamas?
Yeah, he came in sweatpants.
That's so cool. So nobody has ever shown up in like a suit. And you're like, are you kidding me?
People have.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Come in jeans and we're like, take the pants off.
Yeah, yeah. Then you just make them not wear their pants. It's like that horrible restaurant in Texas called Trail Dust where they cut off your tie.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, Texas.
So stupid. Oh, cut off your tie. Just take off their pants. Take off your pants if you want to enter Allie's house.
Yeah, we have a wicker basket. We just leave the pants at the door. So thanks for having me on. I do feel nervous about being on it, which I'm not nervous about podcasting.
No.
I'm nervous about your podcast.
Why?
I think because I'm a member of the Nerd Brigade.
Yes. They've all been on already.
Yeah, I know.
But some of them had never been on a podcast before.
Yeah, but they're good with talking with their
mouths. They're all amazing. Yeah.
So they're fine.
But you've been on podcasts like a million times. Why are you nervous?
Because I am not getting my PhD in neurobiology.
Neither am I. Isn't that awesome?
It is, actually. There are
that's
benefits.
That's true. It's true. A lot of the Nerd Brigade are really well educated.
Yeah. As are you. I mean, that's...
Well, I mean, I dropped out of... I didn't drop out of school. I dropped out of my PhD program. But, like, honestly, I only did, like, a year towards it. I wasn't really that into it. But I think a few of them, the people that we've had on Costa, didn't go to graduate school, I don't think. Brian Sweetek didn't. So it's interesting too. I love seeing people who studied something in school and then like dedicated their career to something where you would almost assume that they have an advanced degree, but they studied something random in school and then they found their passion later in life.
Yeah, that is one great thing I love about your podcast is that I will listen to episodes my friends have been on and be like, oh, I didn't know Holly. I didn't know she studied in Rochester.
I know, me too. It's the weirdest thing. That's why I'm so excited that you're coming on too, because I feel like I don't know you as well as I know some of the people on the Nerd Brigade. And even like when I had Crystal Dilworth on, who's like my best friend, I learned all sorts of things about her that I didn't know. So I'm very pumped about this.
Yeah, bring it on.
I want to start by asking, why a teepee?
Oh, I have always loved Native American culture and history. I grew up, part of my childhood was spent in Northern California, mm-hmm. right in a town that was where gold was discovered. So I grew up around a lot of this weird like gold rush and Western expansion sort of like lore. And so we studied a lot about Native American culture. And so I loved learning about that. And I was obsessed with it. My dad's family is from Montana. And my cousin married a woman who's Blackfoot Indian. So I had always grown up around teepees and a lot of this lore, and I always loved it.
That's awesome.
I know, but I always wanted a teepee, and so I studied plans how to make one out of supplies that I could get my hands on, because in Los Angeles, you can't just, like, go get...
You go to the teepee depot.
Yeah, you can't. You can't, like, go find branches in Los Angeles.
That's true. There's no, like, forest.
No.
To go rummage through.
I realized that. I was like, I need...
So what did you make it out of, like, PVC pipe?
You would. That's so tragic, but it would actually be such a statement. Such a wonderful statement. Hefty bags. And
exactly.
Rebar. No, I got some dowels from.
Oh, dowels. At least that's wood.
It's wood.
Right? It's wood. Well, I noticed on the Instagrams, because I finally joined, that our friend Tegan, who's also been on the podcast, who is in Cave of Thesis right now, she's finishing her PhD and like... just in it, that you guys made a teepee for her to study
in. I did. She needed like a nesting place to work on her thesis, and so she asked if she could borrow my teepee, and I said of course, but I go out of town a lot for work, and so I was trying to figure out the timing of and when I needed it for the next podcast, because we do record in it. And so I was like, listen, meet me in Pasadena, we're gonna make you one, we're gonna go to a public park, gonna be the best.
That's where the picture is taken, just in the middle of a public park.
Yeah, so we ran around Pasadena and got some supplies, and
I gave her the formulas and the diagrams, and we figured out how what the longest poles that could fit in her tiny car were, and then we measured that by 1.2. So we did all the calculations, and with a notepad sitting in Osh hardware.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy.
It was great, but I kept warning her. I was like, this is going to be really anticlimactic because it takes, once you get the supplies, it takes like 5 minutes to make
really?
It. Really? Yeah, you just have to cut a very large semicircle and a pole notch and good to go. But we thought that kids in the park would swarm us being like, I'm sorry, I have a question. How do you get so cool? But like none of the kids cared. Yeah, we sat in it in the park, and then she set it up in her house.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. And it's just like in her living room?
I think it's in her bedroom.
Yep. It is her bedroom now.
Pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. She's going to start hanging things on the teepee walls and maybe going to nest in her teepee.
I think Tegan said she was going to make a fractal pattern.
Oh, that sounds like Tegan. Yeah. Tegan's good at making fractals freehand too, which is nutty. I love it. Well, okay. Teepee's out of the way. That's good. That was always a big, because it also, for whatever reason, doesn't visually seem to fit you. Like
really?
When you're like, I like to spend time in a teepee. And I'm like, but you're so cute and you look like a 50s housewife. No.
I think that's a branding issue. I think I'm having branding issues. Well, the thing is, like for me, I love the outdoors. I love camping without tents. I love getting my hands dirty. I do. Oh. I'll just sleep just out.
And you love bugs.
Love bugs.
So you don't even care if they like crawl on your face.
No, I welcome that.
Yeah, I don't do that.
But my work for Cooking Channel is very like, we're in these, you know, cocktail dresses, and it's a mockery of that. But a lot of people think that I'm really into fake eyelashes and
sure,
crinolines, and it's not, it's farcical. So I have a hard time with reconciling that.
But you do wear a lot of horizontal stripes.
That's all I wear, dude. I'm wearing a horizontally striped shirt right now.
You are. And it's got like this really cute, to me, it feels very mid-century like sailor stripes. Like that's kind of the image that it always brings in mind, which I love. Like cute little sailor pants and like a horizontal striped shirt.
Pure laziness. I just don't want to think about
it. It's a uniform. Yeah, we all have those. Like everything in my closet's black.
Yeah.
It's just because black always matches black. And so it's pretty easy to.
I get it. I grew up goth. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Dude, I was so goth.
Have you done Janet Varney's podcast?
No,
the JV Club?
No.
Okay, so her podcast is about like being an awkward teenager, and you kind of talk about the things that happened in those years and how they've kind of affected you as an adult. And the photo that she always uses for her podcast is like a picture you give her of you as an awkward teenager. And I need a goth picture of you.
Oh man. It's intense.
I got to see that, because I was never goth, but I was like a punk rock raver chick.
I could see that.
So I looked a bit crazy too, but I never had like the really, like I never wore like black lipstick.
Oh, I did.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I had this weird combination where I was really, really studious, really, really into biology and in English and Latin. Hmm. And I was an AP student, super achiever in high school, but the high school I went to was really... We lived in like a wealthy school district on purpose because they had a really good Latin program. So my family rented a house within the district so that we could attend this public school that was really good. And then like the day after I graduated high school, my parents were like, we're out. And so the high school I went to was just full of like girls with perfect highlights and white jeans and Jettas and sororities and
oh my God, that's so funny.
Polo shirts and so
Jettas.
Everyone had a Jetta. So my friends, I had some friends who were a little bit more just studious or artsy. And so we just sort of, I don't know, it was kind of like self-sabotage. We're like, don't worry. I don't want to fit in with you. I'm good.
That's so funny. I could see that though. That's kind of the place you go when you want to be alt. I feel like my high school had a lot of alt options. Like I could be sort of a raver chick, but that didn't come until later. But I could definitely be punk rock. There were a lot of punk rockers. There was like the skater kids. And I don't remember a very big goth vibe. But also it might not have been in vogue then. You know how there's like levels, kind of ebbs and flows.
You're talking about age.
I'm just saying. I'm remembering the South Park episode because they were like all pissy when all the vampire stuff got really big, and so there's that funny episode where the goth kids kept getting like mistaken for vampire kids, and they were like really pissed about it. And that's kind of what high school is like. You know,
sure.
There's kind of trends that go through and then there's not again. I bet you in the late 80s, like a lot of kids were punk rock kids.
Yeah.
And like sure. new wave kids. But then that's like not a thing anymore, which is sad.
I was like a pre-Hot Topic.
Love it.
And then Hot Topic came along and we're like, what's this?
Hot Topic happened when I was 16.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. So I was out of high school because I'm crazy and I was already in college, but I worked there. Yeah. It was like one of my first jobs.
You worked at Hot Topic at 16 while you were in college. There's so much information in that one sentence.
Yes. It was a strange time in my life.
A good time.
Yeah. It was a good
time. I
don't
know. I think that that's one thing that I think is interesting, like bringing it back to identity. Like, it's so interesting to sort of cobble together all these little, you know, all these facets of your life and your interests and stuff. And you know, you might see me as like, oh, I have this cooking show where I wear dresses. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm like, oh, I'm constantly in like boots and stripes and I want to be touching like worms and
yep.
beetles
yep.
and stuff. Like,
and I see that side of you too. And I think it's funny how those historical things that we all sort of are trying to find our way. And we're finding, you know, and a lot of times we self-define based on in groups, like peer groups. And so we go and we visit this peer group and then maybe it's not for us and we find this other one. But it does seem like as you go from one to the other to the other, there's little bits and pieces that kind of get absorbed into who you are. So you've still got a goth side.
Oh, sure. And there's, you know, but it's funny with the Nerd Brigade. You know, as like a defined group of friends,
which is
with
so
the
hilarious.
Website.
I know. It's like our friends have a website.
And a hashtag. It's amazing. You know, I think it's funny because you're in context. You are so different within different groups of people. So in the context of the Nerd Brigade, mm-hmm. I'm always this like massively self-deprecating, apologetic non-PhD who's like a couple years older than you guys and is like, so I come into it always disarming myself with like I'm kind of like a really curious, passionate dilettante, but you guys are all professional.
You do.
That's what.
Oh, that's so interesting. I would never have even put that in my head.
Really?
There. I mean, I kind of feel that way too because so many people have like, and they have like PhDs from Caltech and shit. They're like really smart, and they're young. Like I'm probably. Crystal and myself and Holly are just younger than you. And then the rest of everybody else are like still in their 20s.
Well, it's interesting. I think being a science communicator can mean a lot of different things to different people.
Yeah.
The science, you know, I work on a science show and the science I communicate is different than what you do. And it's a different level than, you know.
And you also do a lot of really cool work at the museum too. So like you communicate both at that level because a lot of the people in the Nerd Brigade have worked either in TV or podcasting or writing to kind of bring science to the public. But it's always cool when there's a component to your, not so much even to your job, but to your interest where you get to bring science face to face with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you actually get to stand there. Well, what are you qualified to do now at the Natural History Museum here in LA? Because I guess, do you get like flair? Like how does it work?
You get flair. Totally get flair, which is like a Girl Scout badge. I was never in the Girl Scouts, but I imagine it's that the same kind of like pride. But depending on which halls you're kind of qualified mm-hmm. to interpret in, it's called interpretation when you're on the floor. And there's like a society of docents, and it's hardcore to get in the society. You have to do a certain number of hours over a certain amount of time. I'm technically a docent in training based on the number of hours I have.
Oh, cool.
And like the level of, you know, of certification I have. So what happens is they'll say, okay, we have a Dino Hall training coming up. And each hall is only offered once or twice a year. You can sign up and say, okay, we have two weeks in a row, two mm-hmm. Saturday mornings, half the day. And you sit through wonderful insane, amazing lectures by paleontologists. And you have booklets and slides and there are little tests. And this is, again, all for volunteers.
But that's so cool because it's like going to school.
Oh, it's great.
But I mean, like going to school with like dead things.
And alive things.
And alive things. You're right. Because you have like the butterfly pavilion.
The spider pavilion. And we have live specimens in the Discovery Center upstairs in the insect zoo. We have them downstairs. The nature lab is chock full of alive things. There's rats and rattlesnakes and black widows, brown widows, turtles, newts, crayfish. So there's actually a lot of their live animal program's great. So
and you get to listen to like legit paleontologists and herpetologists and like just the best of the best that work there.
The best, yeah. So you do that for 2 days. You know, you again, no money to do this. You just because you love it. And, you know, you get to ask questions that you want clarification on or what you think maybe visitors might.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in order to get your badge that you wear on your lanyard, hashtag nerd brigade, one of the gallery leads will follow you around to make sure that you're not like, you know, whispering to kids that like God made this dinosaur on the seventh day or something weird. You know, just like you're not just polluting the land.
Not going rogue.
Yeah. And so once they, you know, they're assured that you're cool with it, then you get your little button and then they can start scheduling you in that hall. So if you have no interest in the gem hall, you don't have to get certified. You peace out and you're like, gems, you're on your own. I don't care about you.
That's awesome. I don't really care about gems.
No, we do have some cool meteorites in there though.
Oh, and I just got a meteorite for Christmas and it's amazing.
Right?
Have I shown it to you?
No, but
I'll show it to you after. I can't really pronounce what it is. It's a, I thought it was pronounced sick hole Alin, but I think it's pronounced like
that sounds like a Turkish insult.
I know. It's got like a super weird pronunciation that I had to look up.
If someone called me that on the street, I would be offended.
Hang on.
Sick hole Alin.
It's super weird. It's from this one strike. Am I spelling it wrong? Yeah, I'm totally spelling it wrong. I'm going to find this. It's from this one strike in Russia.
Ooh.
And actually Phil Plait, who's so sweet, like he saw that I tweeted this meteorite and asked like if people could tell what it was. And then he was like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite kind of meteorite. Here's the whole thing that I wrote about how awesome it is. And I was like, I love you, Phil Plait.
Love
like
him.
I'm so glad we're friends.
Yeah, I enjoy him a lot.
And so I'm going to find what it is. Oh, Sikhote Alin is how I thought you pronounced it, but mm-hmm. That's totally not right at all. It has like this weird pronunciation that, oh. Sikhote Alin.
Ooh.
But it's spelled like Sikhote Alin. So I have a Sikhote Alin meteorite, which they're very like specific looking. They're iron ore, and they just have a very specific look to them. Ooh. And it's different than, so what you're holding in your hand is a piece of metal. He would hate that I'm reading this out loud. Or maybe he would love it. It was destroyed by the impact of another planetary-sized body. So this was actually, most meteorites are made out of stone. This was actually the core of something that was the size of a planet.
What?
And like super molten and awesome. And then it crashed into the earth.
And you got that for Christmas?
And I got it for Christmas.
Good job.
I know.
I once got a $10 Del Taco gift card for Christmas from my boyfriend.
That's awesome.
No, it wasn't.
My kid brother gave me a $10 In-N-Out gift card, which I actually did think was really awesome.
That's adorable.
But he's also not my boyfriend.
That's true.
He's my 14-year-old brother.
This was a long time ago, by the way. I've since moved on romantically. But that's a beautiful meteorite.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's so pretty. It makes me happy. And also, like, that's just, it's cool when you get gifts that are very, very you. You give and get gifts that are very you. How many bugs do you have at your house?
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I have a lot of bugs, and then I have a lot of bug artwork as well, like old, you know, prints from the 1800s and stuff
like
that.
Like those cool kind of vintage books where they would do plates.
Yeah, old insect encyclopedias.
Love
and stuff.
That.
So the funny thing about getting, you know, on the topic of gifts, when you are into science, when you're really passionate about something, people love to give you gifts in that realm, which is awesome. So a lot of my bugs are from, you know, are gifts that I've gotten, or a lot of my prints are like wonderful, amazing gifts that I wouldn't have bought myself, but they're like, someone saw it and they're like, I thought you would love this.
That's,
and of course,
so
I'm like, I'm crying. I love it.
I love that because too, like, I don't know, there's sometimes you'll find things that maybe you, like you said, you wouldn't have gotten yourself. And also because it's something that you really care about, it's great. Because I definitely remember, this is going to make me sound so like spoiled, which I'm not at all. Well, maybe I am, but
I got this pony.
And it was like, I remember when I got this pony, when I got a Jetta for, no.
Stop.
I remember when I was in like middle school this has happened twice now. I bought like a blanket that was zebra print. In middle school, because I was into black, and I was like, okay, it's black and white, and it's zebra print. And my mom was like, she likes zebras. So then it was like zebra everything for like a year. And I finally had to be like, Mom, I'm not into zebras.
That's so cute.
It was really cute. And I felt bad. But and then it happened again later when I bought this beautiful. And now I actually love them. Like, I'll be honest, because if you look closely at all of the weird shit in my apartment, a lot of it's dinosaurs, a lot of it's weird biological stuff. But there's a lot of globes. And that came from buying a globe at a flea market once that was like a really cool old globe where like all of Africa was still imperialist. And like, I love looking at, it is really interesting to see how land divisions have been drawn historically and all the geopolitical shit that comes with it. But they saw that I was like, really liked this globe. So now I have like 15 globes.
That's adorable. Look, I guess it just necessitates a mansion or something.
Exactly. You need a globe in every room. That's what I need.
Or one dedicated globe den. It's kind of like wings of your own museum. You should have a geopolitical history.
Room. Welcome to the globe
An
room.
Archive of imperialist geography.
But it is so cool when people you love and when family members do start to catch on to your interests or try and understand where you are with your interests, because a very cool gift that my mother gave me, not this year but last year, is on my wall. She got me a beautiful like an x-ray light box.
Oh.
And then and then some very personal x-rays like from family members and stuff. So I, yeah.
Wow.
So I can, I don't know. It's like a cool light source.
That is a great lamp. Gift. She was like, we got grandpa's hernia over here.
Exactly.
That's cervical vertebrae.
And I was like, Mom, you're amazing. That's like the best really present sweet. Ever. So that's my little random story.
Well, I think it's nice when your family and friends are supportive of your interests.
Exactly.
It's always good. I mean,
when they're not like, oh my God, you're such a nerd. Like, what? Why do you have bugs all over your apartment, Allie? That's weird.
I do love them, though. I never get sick of them. I mean, I've loved bugs since I was probably 11 or 12. I used to just pour through field guides, and I would get every book I could from the library. Every birthday, every holiday season, I would get new Audubon Society guides, and I would just sit there and thumb through them and read all about them. So, and that's an interest that's never waned. And I don't know why. I never went into entomology as mm-hmm. a field. I studied biology in college, so.
So it's still like an umbrella.
Sure.
You know, it's not like you studied, I don't know, like mechanical engineering.
Yeah, I know. No, I always loved biology,
mm-hmm.
loved it. And I also loved art at the same time. And mm-hmm. I wanted to be a biological illustrator. So I was gearing my studies toward.
Really?
Yeah, toward fine art.
And can you draw?
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, so that's what, but I kind of had a weird, I was studying, you know, biology all through high school, loved it, you know, studying on my own, and then got to college, was enrolled as a biology major and was studying, you know, all the prerequisites, and as well as studio art. And I wanted to be do you know who F. Netter is?
Netter, I do. I think I have a Netter book.
Yeah, I'm sure
yeah,
you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's like, did Netter do like anatomy, like human mm-hmm. anatomy?
Yeah,
yeah, I have a like a neuro Netter book. It's really beautiful.
So
beautiful.
He was what he didn't do. I don't think he did any bugs at all. But
okay.
Yeah, he did human anatomy, and I just I was like, here is someone who has a grasp on science and anatomy, and is also like such. It's just from an aesthetic standpoint, is gorgeous.
Totally, it's almost got like an artistic.
Oh,
twist
definitely.
On it. Like, it's not, it doesn't feel like, I don't know, like photoreal or something. It feels.
Yeah, there's something really beautiful about just even the light. Like,
yeah.
The way the, like, a light plays on a slimy liver. You're like, that's just gorgeous. Like, you didn't have to make it so stunning. So I used to really love his artwork. And so I was studying both. And I remember one day being in the library in college, and I was memorizing the mouth parts of a crawdad. And I really liked it, but I had this weird epiphany where I was like, oh, do I need to know this forever? Like,
yeah.
And I kind of, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be creative and artistic, and I was using biology as sort of a way that if you use art to document, mm-hmm. then you never have necessarily, at the time, I didn't think you had the burden to really interpret and create from art. You could really just document.
Yeah.
And so I decided I wanted to do something that was a little bit, had a little bit more, I don't know, the less, I'm trying to think of the way to say this without bagging on anyone who's a biological illustrator because it's amazing. But I thought maybe I would do something that that was a little bit more freeform than that.
Yeah, freeform, like something where you were coming up with what the art that you were creating instead of drawing on nature.
Sure. Although I still love drawing. I still love doing biological.
I think that's awesome. I need to get an Allie Ward bug print. Mm. You should start making those for all your friends.
You know,
I will commission one off of you.
I feel like whenever I get really sick of flying around the country and I get really sick of jet lag and stuff, I just have this like sad little vision of this tiny cabin and I'm just working in watercolors, like drawing mosquitoes.
I love it.
That's all I want to do.
Adorable. No, actually, you know what? It blows my mind. First of all, I have no artistic ability at all. Like in any of the arts, any of the fine arts that you can think of. The only thing is when I was younger, I was a singer. So it's like I have pipes. But I can't, my hands are just invalid. Like when I try to play piano, it's just like, meh. Like, you know, that episode of The Simpsons where he like gets really fat and then he can't. Does anybody remember that?
I don't remember
it. It's really funny.
But I have heard you sing and you're really good.
Oh, thanks. It makes me so sad that you don't remember The Simpsons.
No,
did you ever watch
The
Simpsons?
I did, but not all of it.
There was an episode where Homer goes, I think he goes on disability. He realizes that obesity will let him go on disability. So he gets really fat and then he tries to dial 911, but he can't because his, and it's like, the fingers you have used to dial are too fat. To order a special dialing one, please mash the keyboard now.
So
that's what my hands do when I try to play piano.
Your hand, you do not have sausage rings.
But they just don't do what my brain tells them to. Same thing with like a guitar. This is my, nobody can see this, but I'm doing guitar motions. I was a singer, that was fine, but I can't draw. I can't reproduce life in any way through my hands.
You can stuff birds.
I can't. Difficulty. It was difficult. I did taxidermy once with Alice's tremendous help and guidance. And I actually got really frustrated and wanted to give up like halfway through, but she was good. Because it's great. You do all this work and it's so tedious. Mm-hmm. And then you do it all on like one wing and then you're like, fuck, there's a whole other wing. Ooh. Like I don't want to do the other wing.
I always want to know when people have jobs like that, like what does she listen? What is Alice, who's a taxidermist at the mm-hmm. NHM? What does she listen to? Does she listen to like death metal? Does she listen to podcasts? Classical?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to, you know how sometimes somebody's physical appearance is reflective of kind of the niche that they find themselves mm-hmm. in. And she's got a very cool like rockabilly vibe, but I don't know if that means she is like, I don't know.
Really into like Skrull Net Zippers.
Exactly. Like, who knows? She could be listening to like, I don't know, something like Michael Bublé or something for all we know.
All the Josh Groban.
Exactly. Yeah. But she definitely, she probably does listen to music. I would think so. And for her, she was saying that it's very therapeutic. Like, because part of taxidermy is you're basically cleaning everything out from under the skin. And that cleaning process is the part that she says that she loves the most because it's just very exact and you can be a little OCD about it. And it like focuses that sort of OCD into a very specific process. And for her, she said that that's very calming.
Wow.
For me, it's really frustrating. I was not good at it.
Were you... did it just seem too laborious? Were you just like, oh God, there's so much guts?
It kind of, and it was also like the guts come out fine. It's all the like little pieces of meat that are like stuck to the skin. You know what it is? I worked for so many years in biology as first as a student and then as a TA and then as an adjunct professor. And I taught all these bio and anatomy and physiology courses. So I led dissection year after year after year after year. And so I was like, oh, I'll be good at taxidermy. But taxidermy is like the opposite of dissection. In dissection, you usually want the tissue. You want viable tissue to then do something else with it. In taxidermy, that all goes into a meat bucket. That's literally, there's a meat bucket on the table. And the idea is that the skin and the feathers and the fur have to be intact. Mm-hmm. So I'm like ripping holes left around, fuck, and then you got to sew them back up. Because usually, you know, with dissection, you're like, get rid of the skin. It's in the way.
Yeah.
So it's a very different and semi difficult.
I was just going to ask if you, did dissection. Clearly you did, but yeah, that was
a lot.
Did you ever have any issues with any particular
animals?
Yeah.
Like, did I ever get rat bite fever?
No. No, did you ever like, I remember one time we had to dissect a pig and my roommate had just gotten a puppy.
Aww.
And it was the same size and weight,
and they're furry a little bit. These beetle pigs, when they're late, they're furry. That can be hard. No, I've dissected literally hundreds of fetal pigs because I've taught dissection on them for years. That was never really that hard for me, the fetal pigs. I think the hardest for me was when I was doing dissection, not for teaching purposes, but doing it for actual science. And I would use, when I was working in a neuroscience lab, we would seed these little plates with brain cells. And the way that we would get the brain cells is we would use a pregnant mouse and we would use the neural tissue from the pups before they were born. So you would have to sacrifice the pregnant mouse and take the pups and use that tissue, which was actually a very cool and very conservative way to do it, because a lot of times one mouse equals one experiment. Mm-hmm. And in this case, one pregnant mouse equaled like 150 experiments because we could seed lots of plates with the tissue. But you would have to sacrifice the mama mouse by hand. And I remember it took about 3 or 4 sessions of my professor literally holding his hands over my hands. And before I could do it on my own, the very first day I went home and cried. Like, it was so difficult. And I used to also rescue anytime the pups would be born early or something would go wrong and we couldn't use them for the science, I would take them home and they would be my pets, which I don't think I was supposed to do.
I don't think that's legal.
I don't think so.
Let's keep that under a little.
Exactly. Let's not tell all of the people listening to this podcast.
Keep that under our hats. How did you have to kill the pregnant mouse? With a tiny gun or what? No. The tiniest revolver.
Well, the really freaky thing is that rats, which are much bigger than mice, often they use like a little guillotine on rats.
Oh,
I know.
No.
It's really fucked up and it's bloody. Yeah. It wasn't like that for mice. Mice are pretty easy. You it's totally humane. You put them in a halothane chamber, so a little chamber that gasses them until they go to sleep so they don't feel anything. And then while they're asleep, you do what's called cervical dislocation. So you basically put a blunt object at the base of their neck, and when you pull their tail, it separates their spine. So it's really fast and they can't feel it.
I would be very bad at that.
But you do have to do it with your hands. It's hard. And you feel it, you know? I know. It's tough. Everybody listening right now hates me. Like,
no,
I'm about to
no.
get some real hate
no,
mail.
No, 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 no. I mean, it's
important. But it's, yeah, it's really hard. Like I said, I cried the first time I did it. And then you have only so many in you. I did it for about a year. It was a weekly seeding where I was managing the cell culture facility. And then I was done. I was like, I don't ever want to sacrifice another animal again. So I don't.
And then did you have like a goodbye moment? Did you like you know, drop your tray or
throw a huge fucking party? Yeah. Yeah, I was out of there. I was out of there so fast when I finally graduated and, you know, beyond.
It makes science communication seem relatively easy, doesn't it?
Like, oh, hell yeah. It's so not bloody. What I used to use the most graphic phrase when I would talk about my job and like when I was dating boys or whatever. And I'd be like, I'm elbow deep in pig guts every day. It's just pretty gross. But I can show you actually on my shelf. We'll do that. We'll spend some time, Allie, looking through some. I've got a great cadaver atlas.
Ooh.
I've got some really great how-to guides on dissecting fetal pigs. And
love it.
You know, it's lots of fun. But you are really, really, I think of you as the bug girl. Obviously, you have more broad interest in that in the sciences, because how many different certifications do you have now at the Natural History Museum?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. 5 or so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, not that many. But
are you in the Paleo Hall yet?
I am. I'm not officially certified for it because I took all the training, and I think the step where they have to follow you around and make sure that you don't talk about God is the only thing that they haven't.
And that's
done
like
yet.
The hall where it's the most important not to do
it's
that.
It's the most important. That's not really why they do it. They also
call
just
Jesus horses. Not okay.
Oh dear. No, that's so I need to have someone follow me around. But I'll be totally honest, dude. That's not the hall that I'm excited about.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be. I'm so. We're different in
I know.
We're scientifically different, Allie. You and I.
I am all about tiny alive things.
I love that,
and
I'm all about giant dead things. They're so interesting to me.
What I love about bugs in particular is I love how specialized and how tiny they are, and how much shit they get done for being so tiny. So one of the things I love about bugs is the scale.
Yeah.
And the power in just the sheer volume of bugs and how they change ecosystems and how they're so important in food chain. So I love that that bugs are so much more powerful than we give them credit for, but so tiny. So I kind of love bugs for that reason. And also there's something about them that's, you know, and I don't know if it's just, it's part of it is exoskeletons and part of it is like just what seems to be a coldness that's also run by so much instinct and so much just specialized behavior that they're tiny, like tiny, tiny robots to me.
They kind of are.
And I love that about them. And
So yeah, I would so much rather be around a tailless whip scorpion and a centipede and a wolf spider than around, like, no offense, like a big dead sauropod.
That's so weird. I just don't get it. I know. Like, all of those things I'm happy with so long as they're behind glass. You know what I mean? Like, I do not want to get anywhere close to a scorpion, for example.
I feel emotional about them.
That's amazing. Like, that makes me so... Do you collect any, like...
Live?
I just finished this David Quammen book called The Reluctant Mr. Darwin, which was kind of like...
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. And yeah, I've mentioned it already, so I don't have to do it again. But he does talk a lot about... Because Darwin was a naturalist, and there's a lot of naturalist in you. And I like that. And... One thing that he did when he was young, before he even understood cataloging or taxonomy or any of that, he was just a fancy beetle collector. Mm-hmm. He just loved the way that really fancy rare beetles look. So he would catch them and put them in kill jars and then just like pin them.
Yeah.
Do you do that? Do you collect?
I don't collect much, mostly because I live in Los Angeles.
There are bugs in Los Angeles.
No, there are. You know, my favorite bug in LA is, like, hands down. Well, two. I love a mantis. I reared a tiny mantis named Mirabelle last year.
Aww.
She was my beloved pet.
Did you feed her? What are mantids?
Mantids.
Mantids. What do they eat?
She loved fly eggs.
How the fuck do you procure fly eggs?
You just pet stores or
really?
Or if you order a bug to rear, they'll ship you a tiny praying mantis with a little tiny thing full of fly eggs, and you keep them in the fridge.
Oh.
And then what I did is I made a harpoon out of a skewer, and then I taped a tiny needle to it, and then I would pierce a fly egg, and it would ooze just a little bit, and then I would kind of be like, Mirabelle, are you hungry? And then she would see the fly egg, and she'd be like, oh, man, I got this. And the fly egg is not going anywhere. It's not able to move, and it's speared on a harpoon. But she would stalk it and stalk it and stalk it, and then she would grab it, and then she'd just eat it like a calzone. Double fisted. And then when she got bigger, I would feed her mealworms.
That's awesome.
Which are darkling beetle larvae.
And they're alive and squirmy.
And squirmy, yeah. When you get them out of the refrigerator, they're sort of like, what happened? They're like someone that just like woke up from a rave.
How cool is it though that bugs can like be in the refrigerator and then be like, hey guys, I'm back from the party.
Hey, what's going on? What's the harpoon about? But Mirabelle actually died prematurely because she ate a mealworm. She loved it. And then I was like, do you want another mealworm? And she's like, heck yeah. And then I came back into the room and she was like,
oh, no.
I overfed her meal. She died doing what she loved. She was eating worms.
Well, that's good.
So we had a funeral. And this is really sad, is that I didn't know you yet. But last January, Mirabelle passed away and I bawled my face off.
No, you didn't.
I walked into the room. I saw she was dead and I sank to the floor. I'm going to cry thinking about it.
Because
she was my little thing. She was my buddy. She'd crawl on my hand. And this is like if you went out to your car and you saw a dead mantis on it from a road trip, you'd be like, well, shit sucks for you, mantis. But it was like, this was my mantis. Yeah. I wouldn't really think that. I would be really sad if I saw a mantis dead on my car.
But might not like actually cry.
Yeah, no. But people just kill bugs all the time. But
never kill a mantis, though.
Oh, I know. Who would?
Because they're...
Majestic.
So, yeah, they're majestic.
And they're holy, right?
A little. No. They're like little aliens.
They're little
alien bugs.
They're such aliens. But yeah,
You guys had a funeral?
I had a funeral because I thought, okay, well, I had been traveling still for work, and so I sent out an email to about 30 friends, and I was like, you guys, Mirabelle, she passed away. And if you'd like to come over, it's open casket, come in black, bereavement attire is encouraged. We're going to listen to Bauhaus. So everyone showed up in black.
There's Phil, your goth coming back.
Totally.
Love it.
Loved it. Phil showed up in I think in all black. Leela Higgins from the museum showed up in a netted veil.
That was so sweet.
You get me. And then it was open casket. I made a tiny casket with lace and she was just, and then there were candles lit and it was like the best party ever. There were like 45 people there. Like people I didn't know showed up.
That's so great.
If you want to see, if anyone is curious how to throw a bug funeral, go to the hashtag on Instagram, RIP Praying Mantis. That's RI Praying Mantis.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. You'll see photographs.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me share my story.
No, I'm I'm really regretful that I hadn't met you yet at that time.
I almost want to kill like a cockroach and do it again.
You'd kill a cockroach, wouldn't you?
Here's the problem.
Cockroaches don't count, do they?
I'm a secret bigot when it comes to cockroaches, that I am like, they're the one bug that I'm like, why can't I let you crawl on me?
Yeah, because they're fucking gross and they eat shit.
Well, that, yeah. But they also clean themselves compulsively.
Yeah.
I would let a spider, I'd let a, like a whip scorpion, I would let all kinds of things crawl on me.
That's true. There's a stigma with the cockroach. It's a bottom feeder.
I feel really bad about it.
They're stigmatized. You know what I don't love? Mm. I don't love a cricket.
What?
And by I don't love, I fucking hate a cricket.
Let's talk about
it. I know. It's a weird it's a weird thing, but crickets are my least favorite bugs.
What is it about them?
There's something really crunchy and gross about them. And like when people talk about eating bugs and then they talk about eating crickets, it like makes the bile rise up in my gut regions. There's just something extra. And you know what? They fly at your face, which is like not a good feature of a bug that it'll fly at your face. I definitely remember, and they make a noise that's just awful. It's like a telltale heart noise. Like it'll destroy your night if you're trying to sleep. And so I remember though in Texas, I grew up in Plano, Texas, and there was a couple of seasons. I think I've mentioned this before because people tweeted and were like, dude, I remember that. There were a couple of seasons where the city had cricket infestations that were so bad. There would be, this is going to really gross you out, there'd be like mountains of dead crickets under all the light poles, and it smelled like death.
I would have loved it.
And you would go to pump gas in your car, and it would be like, you know, the gas station's all lit and there's nothing around it, and it would be like biblical.
Oh, I love it.
Like just flying at your face, and oh, it was so horrible. And so I think that I have a weird thing with crickets now because of that.
That makes all the sense in the world.
I won't touch them.
If you're like, oh, I hate crickets. Why? I don't know. But oh, I hate crickets. Well, as a child, I was infested with their dead bodies.
Exactly. Okay. As a child, like there was a scourge.
You know, I was talking to, I met Will Wheaton recently through some friends, and I had never met him before. I've only met him, I guess, that one time. But
Will has promised he's going to come on the podcast. Will does not podcast, so I'm slowly working on
him. He has his own now.
Yeah, but he doesn't guest.
Okay.
Like, he's weird. He just is not a fan. But he did, I have documentation that he promised he'd come on, so
good.
One day we'll see.
I don't know him well, but someone mentioned something about me and bugs, and he said he hated spiders. I was like, why do you hate spiders? Why is that? And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, I just hate them. They're, you know, the way they crawl, da da da. And he started listing the aspects of a spider, but wouldn't clarify why.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you have any like experiences like as a kid with a spider? And he's like, oh, I guess a tarantula crawled over my head once when I was out. And I was like, well, like, there you go.
Like, I almost died from a black widow bite once, but other than that.
That's also like, I find that, I don't know why I had to say that was Will Wheaton, because I'm not friends with him, but I just thought,
it was a name drop.
I don't think he cares about me necessarily. I just thought it was funny.
No, Will Wheaton is amazing. He's a really good guy. And I think that now you and Will Wheaton are probably going to be like shopping at Home Depot together.
Sure. Sure.
Building teepees.
We follow each other on Twitter. That's as deep as our friendship goes.
Yeah.
But that happens at the museum a lot, where if you're in an exhibit, and I mean, this is kind of the crux to being an interpreter in the museum and being a docent, is it's not just like, this is a sauropod, you know, like this is a beetle. It's you don't tell people. What you do is you ask questions about them. So instead of telling someone everything about a newt, ask them, what do you see about this newt? Well, it's got a belly that's a different color. Why do you think the belly is that color? Asking a lot of open-ended questions and leading them to the answer on their own. And so interpretation is also about finding the emotional connection people have to objects.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting for me, no matter who I meet, if it's someone at the museum or if it's a relative or if it's a celebrity nerd that doesn't know me well, when someone has any kind of strong reaction to anything, an artifact or an animal, is always figuring out why. And I think that that's like your hatred of crickets is like so fascinating. And my love of insects, you know, probably comes from, you know, my sister had a boyfriend who was an entomologist. And so he would come over and wait for her to get ready to go on dates. She was older than me. And, you know, we'd sit on the porch and see what was under the light. And so
great.
Which was cool. He was a super cool guy. But so I think you have this, there's so much tied up in curiosity that has to do with nostalgia. And
for
I love
sure.
that.
That's true.
Or in revulsion in this case.
And there are certain things that like society tells you you're not supposed to like. You know what I mean? Like, and there are certain things that are kind of, they're learned things, but there are things that I guess they're just learned from such a young age, and for good reason. Like, I can understand being afraid. Well, there's not that many spiders that bite, though, are there? There's not that many spiders that are venomous.
I mean, they're all venomous. Every spider's venomous.
But there's not that many that will actually cause, like, illness in a human.
In a human, no.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think there's there's the swiftness of motion, maybe, and people also the webs. People are freaked out by the webs.
The webs are so beautiful, though.
Yeah,
I do love a spider web.
Have you ever gotten one in your face?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me that much. I know for some people it's really gross because they're a bit sticky.
Yeah,
there's like a sticky sensation, and some people really don't like that. But
I think it's a control issue. I think a lot of times you can walk into a web and not see it, so you feel like you're not in control of a situation, or a spider can move really quickly, and you don't. You know what I mean? So I think that there's a power. There.
But when I was a kid, I think that like Charlotte's Web was the cartoon version was like kind of big, and we all loved Charlotte. Charlotte like made us sad,
right?
I don't know. So I maybe that affects my emotional connection with spiders. I definitely like spiders.
I think they're great,
and they're beautiful.
They're beautiful,
and they're different than other bugs. They're not insects.
Mm-mm.
They're arthropods. Is that right? Arachnids.
They're all arthropods, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
okay.
But yeah, I love that. I love the sexual dimorphism of spiders in particular, because like the females are just like huge and they'll eat anything, and then you look and like the males are these like tiny specks that are, and it's just so interesting to see how different the same species can be in terms of, you know, just the sex of it. And I just think it's interesting to study and learn about that, and then try to project it falsely on my own life.
Do you want to like cannibalize
a
boy? Is that what you're telling
me? No, I was so worried though. I was so worried when I got the praying mantis that there would be like, I want to rip a guy's head off. No, I just think it's interesting when we're so used to our, like, you know, part of what we do, and also women that are study science or, you know, a minority in chemistry classes, and, you know, which is frustrating. Or, I mean, I had a guy that I interviewed for the science show I work on.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We're going to interject for a second and talk about this. We haven't even, I'm like, Allie's here, whatever.
I'm sorry.
We haven't even talked about like what you do.
No.
You work on a science show with Moraka called Innovation Nation.
Yep.
And it's on, is it CBS?
Mm-hmm.
I'm CBS. So good at this. It's CBS on Saturday mornings.
Uh-huh.
Go me.
We can also thank Crystal for tweeting that out every, Crystal's better at RPR than I am.
I know.
I work on that, but I was, you know, interviewing someone about a fire retardant, and I was,
like you do. Yeah.
And I, at the end of the interview, at the end of the day, he said, you know, I'm really impressed by, you really seem to grasp the science. You asked some good questions. I didn't expect that of you at all. I thought you'd come in here and just sort of poke at things and smile. And I was like, wow, that's irritating.
Yeah, but, I know. It's like part of you is like, well, thanks. And then you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why do you expect that I'm a science reporter? Like, why would you expect that I don't know how to do a science interview?
But I don't know. But I think that the what's interesting to me about biology and, you know, about sexual dimorphism and about there's so many aspects of it that I love some of the narratives behind it, because they're so foreign to, you know, what we're used to in our own psychology. So I don't know. I love gossiping about insane shit that happens in the natural world. Like,
and you know, a lot of good story. I feel like without fail, when we all hang out, there's at least one like epic story that you tell. That's from nature. It's like ripped from nature, but it's true. It's like you're gossiping about your weird friends.
I love
and you're
it.
Like, no way, Sarah did that.
I know. Like, I want to gossip about like turtle three ways and like cannibalistic bitches and the spider kingdom. Like, it to me, I don't understand why people don't get as thrilled about that as they do about like Real Housewives, because it's like, let me tell you about what this insane bird does. You know, I to me, when you frame it in this narrative way, it becomes so thrilling, and I love sharing.
It's true. And you know what? It does make me like, you kind of threw that out there. I don't know why they don't like this more than like Real Housewives. And it really does make me wonder, because I don't get Real Housewives. When I try to watch it, I don't get it. But like millions of people enjoy that kind of programming, and it makes me, and I can say kind of like, oh, it's you psychologically, I think it's a thing where like it makes you feel better about your own life to see other people fail or whatever. But Is that true? Is that really what the appeal is? Like, why do people latch on to what I call humiliation television, but a lot of people in the industry call conflict reality? Mm-hmm. Why do people love that so much?
I don't know, girl. You studied psychology. Why are you asking the bug girl? No, I...
Because there's a lot of conflict reality in the bug kingdom.
No, I know. That's
it's the bug kingdom. That's not really a thing, but I'm going to call it the bug kingdom.
But I mean,
it's the animal kingdom.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think, no, that's really interesting, and I think one thing that is, because I've wanted to work in, like, in some kind of science communication since I was young. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, either make biological illustrations or I wanted to make nature documentaries and stuff. And so the idea of delivering the narratives and the high stakes and the bizarre behaviors and the gorgeous colors and the undiscovered species and the threat to them and the threat to each other, that to me... There's so much beauty. There's so much intrigue. The stakes are so high. There's so many weird lessons.
Yeah,
you can learn.
And there's drama. It's like
there's so much
drama in that.
And I always loved watching so many documentaries growing up. And it bums me out that a lot of the, you know, that Discovery is like fake like mockumentary programs. And, like,
I know,
ice
without
road
telling
truckers
people
and,
that they're mockumentaries, which is really bad.
That to me, I'm just so curious why people stopped. Like, at what point? Like, reality conflict television took over.
That's true, because historically, I mean, if we had been kids in the 50s instead of in the, like, 80s, 70s and 80s, then we would have grown up with different TV. TV yeah. would have been smarter, and those nature documentaries would have been kind of, like, play. They would have been fun. They wouldn't have felt like, you know, reel-to-reel in school.
Yeah.
But now that's how we identify them.
I know, and I think it would be so interesting, like, last year for Valentine's Day, you weren't there yet, but we...
I know.
There
was, or maybe like, I was, but I was like...
You probably...
Had the plans.
Probably had Valentine's Day plans. But yeah, it was... I had just met Holly Bender, who you've had on the podcast. And
that's true. I guess I met you right after that.
Mm-hmm. And Phil and Kyle Hill.
Okay.
We had all just kind of met, and we decided on Valentine's Day, let's get together. The four of us, we didn't have plans. Let's get together, have dinner. Everyone come armed with some tales of like insane... like just insane romantic and in air quotes behavior in the natural world. And we'll just over dinner talk about it. So, but yeah, framing it in that like an interesting, like gossipy, curious way is just what I love about.
It's so good. And that's kind of what we're going to be doing. And I think that this podcast will air right after it, but that's what we're going to be doing at First Fridays at the Natural History Museum. This time we're mm-hmm. going to be talking about, cause it's like right before Valentine's Day. So like freaky deaky stuff. Like,
so exciting.
I love it. In animals, in bugs, which are animals of course. And just kind of across the board.
Yeah.
You're going to be awesome. You have so many good stories.
Oh God.
Can you share a story on air? Like, I don't know, like one good weird thing.
Oh, Valentine's
like,
story?
Your, yeah. Like what's one of your favorites?
My favorites. I mean, oh my gosh. My favorite has always been... it's probably the African bat bug. It's a tie between red velvet mites and the African bat bug. Okay, we'll talk about traumatic insemination.
Okay, good.
Red velvet mites are very sweet, and they build love gardens, and they try to impress each other with like beautiful campsites.
And they're like tiny, like mites.
And
like,
they're tiny.
Think of mites, like, are they like dust mites?
Yeah, they're sort of. They're tiny. And
that's
they're
a
red,
mite sound.
Velvety, but we're not going to talk about red velvet mites.
Oh, okay.
Instead, we're going to talk about African bat bugs.
Okay.
And African bat bugs, they have what they call traumatic insemination, which is like, I realize you have a vagina, but I don't really care. I want to knock you up, so I'm just going to stab you in the abdomen. And the ladies are like, fuck you, number one. Like, that's rude. And so, in order to at least try to protect themselves from these sharp stabby penises, wavered penises, they developed kind of an area around their abdomen that kind of looked like a fake vagina but was a little sturdier. So they're like, just at least if you're gonna do that, just do it here. And so
it's so weird.
Which is insane, but it gets weirder. So then the bat bugs would be like, is this a guy or girl? I don't care. I'm gonna stab it in its abdomen and try and get it pregnant. And it would be like, I'm a dude, bat bug. And that's again very rude. And so then the male bat bugs started evolving fake vaginas so that if they were going to get traumatically inseminated by another dude, at least they would do it in an area that had more protection. But the unfortunate thing is those fake vaginas
uh-huh.
were actually
better at sort of protecting them from being wounded. And so the male bat bugs would start kind of avoiding that area. So essentially, the female bat bugs started evolving to have a fake vagina that was modeled more after the male's fake vagina, which was modeled after the fake vagina.
So they have the vagina.
Yeah.
Do they still have the first fake vagina?
I think it started to go away. To look more like the male's fake vagina.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
But in some colonies, they will kill each other.
They'll just like stab them in the head and just fill it with cum.
Yeah, it's just
so
like
gross.
It's just like the like someone who's on Viagra and PCP and has a knife for a dick. It's the worst. I'm so sorry. I don't know what your audience is like. I hope they're not 12.
My audience is loving this.
Okay,
right
good.
Now.
I'm so sorry.
And they probably are 12.
But like, I don't understand how you could like how you could care that like Mike Tyson got like a DUI more than you could care about like red velvet mites making like love gardens that they then
oh
destroy.
I want to hear about this. I want to hear about this too. You said you weren't going to talk about it, but we have to talk about it.
This is like it's so and they're tiny. They're so tiny.
The mite sound.
They're mites are. I mean, all bugs are. But like, there's these tiny, crazy, drama hungry robots. How do you not love that? I don't understand it. Anyway, so red velvet mites.
Uh-huh.
So
I love the name too because it reminds me of like a Sprinkles cupcake.
I know. It reminds me of a newlywed suite in Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Which is actually appropriate. So red velvet mites are so romantic. Male red velvet mite is like, I want to find a good girl. I want to settle down. I want to make a couple thousand babies. I want to do this right. And so a red velvet mite will very gentlemanly create a love garden with tiny sticks. And he might use his sperm to glue it all together. I'm not sure. It's essentially like a Burning Man camp. Like
nice.
A super dope, like, check out my tent at Burning Man. Do you not want to come in here and have intercourse with me?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so they'll work on it and they'll leave a trail of sperm out like kind of like a driveway. And the female red velvet mite will be like, well, that's nice. I'll check that out. And then she'll be like, you're amazing. And then he'll drop a bubble of sperm and then she'll sit on it. And she's like, this is working out great. But sometimes there'll be some dick, some like bully red velvet mite who'll be like, nice, nice love garden. And then he'll just destroy it. So that another female red velvet mite is like, she's like, I just got to bust your garden. I'm going to go have sex with this bully who has like an okay garden.
That's such
it's
shit.
Insane. It's
but
insane.
It's also like us.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like I definitely see parallels. Like the like sweet, kind of dark, artistic guy who's like in the corner and he's super cute and he like paints a pretty picture of you. And then this other guy like punches him in the face and he's like, that guy's a fag.
Yeah.
You know? And you're like, and then the girl is like, oh, I like your muscles. And you're like, what is happening right now?
And she's like, I guess I'll sit on your sperm bubble.
Exactly.
And then the other beta guy's like, damn it.
I know. And then he's like, I'm not. I love you. And then you should have been with him all along because he's like really artistic and your kids would have skills.
I know, but then you know what? Your babies are going to be bigger dicks and they're going to be able to bully the other ones.
Oh, no.
You know what
and
I mean?
Then it just keeps going.
Keeps going and going.
Instead of having pretty pictures.
Exactly.
That's
but I told this story to my dear friend, Matt Inman, the oatmeal, and I told it to him. he was very dazzled by it. And for a couple of weeks, I was like, oh, what's the next comic you're working on? He's like, oh, I'm working on something about a cat. And I was like, oh, what is it? Working on some of this cat thing. And finally he put it out and he published it and he had lied to me. He was working on the Red Velvet Mite story for a while. So he really loved that.
That's so
story
great.
A lot. But
I bet you a lot of people listening have actually seen that comic.
It's possible.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He actually gave a shout out to the Natural History Museum in my honor for that. but there's so much drama in nature. I think that's why dinosaurs don't interest me as much
because they're like dusty and dead.
We just don't know about the behavior, and it's the behavior that's really interesting.
And I get that. And I think for some people it's exciting because they like to try and imagine it.
Sure.
I think for me the reason that I love dinosaurs so much is that, you know, when kids are growing up, a lot of times they have these like wild imaginations and they love fantasy and you know, they're into dragons and things like that. And I was always a little too materialistic, and so like dinosaurs are amazing to me. They're like my dragons because I just can't wrap my head around dragons.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I don't get it. It's like Game of Thrones. Like I can't.
No, that makes sense.
I don't
sense.
Like fantasy.
That makes
And dinosaurs
sense.
Are real, which is amazing.
Insane.
Like
I mean,
it's insane that those things used to like live where we live.
Yeah, I know. Cool. That's nuts. I mean, that's nuts.
It's pretty nuts.
I'm a little micro.
I like it though. I think
that's cool. Which is fine.
And you know what? Bugs make good art. They do.
They do.
They're pretty in your house. I have some bug art right now. I can see it, not from where you're sitting, but I can. Yeah. These leaf bugs that are really fun and pretty.
Have you been to my house?
I haven't been to your house
yet.
Oh,
yeah. You'd see my whole bug collection. I have a whole wall.
I'm so excited.
I know. I'd love it. I mean, it makes me sad sometimes, but...
Because they're all dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of collectors, well, a lot of the times they'll kill them. That's true. Okay. That's not going to make you feel better.
I know. But yeah, I do. I just am never not dazzled by them.
They're beautiful. Can I ask you before I ask you the final stuff, because I got to let you go because you got shit to do. You're popular.
Oh, it's popular. Saturday night. It's Saturday night. I'm wearing a shirt that has curry on it. Like I'm ready to
and
take.
And smells like hash browns.
I'm ready to take this town by storm.
This makes me so happy. But I want to note, because how did you meet the rest of the Nerd Brigade? You were friends with Phil. This is all just personal and nobody listening to the podcast there. But you were friends with Phil first?
Yeah, what happened was I think I was looking on Instagram at like bugs or something and found Phil's Instagram and he has these awesome photos. I was like, this is amazing, great photographer. And great.
Phil Torres, by the way, he was on the podcast. He sang a song about a frog crossing the road in the Amazon.
God bless him.
Yeah, it was good.
He once told me a story about how he had to use his acoustic guitar to get a porcupine out of his hut in the Amazon. I was like, can you just stop it? He's like so Indiana ridiculous. Jones meets The Bachelor.
And his Instagram is so funny because there's all these pictures of him like in the jungle shirtless.
I know.
And he'll be like, look at that beautiful waterfall. And everybody's like, what waterfall?
Oh my God. Yeah, he's the best. But so we became Instagram friends. And then I have another friend, Leela Higgins, who works in the live animal program. She's an entomologist at the Natural History Museum, who was a friend of a friend. I had never met either of them, but we were all Instagram friends. Uh-huh. So we would tag each other in photos. Look at this. Look at that. So Leela brought me in for a tour of the Insectary, which is like Willy Wonka, the best place on earth, in the core of the Natural History Museum. Invited Phil. So the three of us met that day. Leela suggested I become a volunteer, and I signed up. And so
she's good.
She's good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so we were all kind of online friends for about 6 months. And then Mirabel, rest in peace, kicked the bucket.
And she brought everybody together.
Yeah. And I invited Leela and Phil. And then the next day was First Fridays. And so Phil's like, I'm going to go. You should come with me. Or we should meet up there. And I was like, of course, Leela would be there too. So we went. And then he knew Jason from the internet, who knew Holly.
He hadn't met Jason?
No, they had never met IRL ever.
That's
OMG.
So weird. So Jason Goldman and I met at where did we meet? We met at Science Online like years ago when we were there as science communicators, and we became very close. And I also independently met Crystal Dilworth at another conference called Brainstem in Canada, where we were there as science communicators. And I became very close to Crystal, and I became very close to Jason. And then through that web is how I met everybody else. Phil through the TV show we work on, Holly through Crystal, and just all those Caltech folks. Pretty weird story, but not that interesting to anybody listening. So the other thing I wanted to ask you before my final two questions, I'm just going to drag this out. We didn't talk at all about the fact, I mean, you made reference to the fact that you do cooking shows.
Yeah.
This is like fascinating about you. Okay. I love this about you because you have a lot of TV experience. You've been an actress previously. You are, you do work on this great science show would you say it's for like tweens?
Yeah.
It's not for young kids. It's definitely for older kids who are thinking.
Yeah.
But it's still a Saturday morning TV show. So yeah. Tweens.
Tweens.
I feel like there's a demographic name that they use in like TV. That's
yeah, I don't
or
know.
Whatever.
They're for called either ors.
Exactly.
I don't know.
They're for the either ors. But you also, like when everybody met you in kind of the Nerd Brigade, you were full-time podcasting and like you're a cooking show person.
Yeah.
What is that called?
I guess it's
are you a host?
Host, yeah.
A cooker?
Yeah.
A chef?
Yeah. Well, okay. I started in TV when I was still in college, and I got a part on a show that was terrible and very embarrassing.
Are you gonna say it out loud?
Cheech Marin was in it, and at one point I had to get tased, and I did a very bad job acting. But I liked. I liked the rates that you got when you were in SAG as opposed to working minimum wage at Circuit City.
Hell yeah.
So I did that for a while, came down to LA and was doing that. And then what I loved about acting at least was how much I got to learn. Mm. So if there was some stupid, terrible script that was set in Appalachia, I would then read 17 books about Appalachia and do very
very poorly in the audition, but I would really love learning about Appalachia. And so I got mugged at knife point.
Holy shit,
Allie. I'm sorry.
This is such a good transition.
Sorry. Very clunky.
I'm not
segue.
Laughing. I'm not laughing that you got mugged at knife point. Holy fuck. Okay, so you were acting and then you got mugged at knife
point.
Yeah,
it was broad daylight. I got mugged by two guys with kitchen knives.
In L.A.?
In L.A., yeah.
Wow. And, but not like butter knives, like real, legit
like
kitchen knives.
Real, sharp, yeah. serrated ones.
Yeah.
And I escaped. I took my purse and I threw it like a football. And then I memorized their plate and ran to a payphone and called police. And we ended up going to court. And I was unharmed physically, but I was definitely emotionally and psychologically very, very traumatized from it. I had never, I still trust people too much.
Yeah.
But I just.
That breach and like that violence for no reason toward you.
Sure.
Like what the fuck?
And so, you know, I'd get sent out for acting parts where it's like, cool, it's Tuesday morning, 11 o'clock, you're going to get raped on a cruise ship. And I was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Wow.
I'm not going to do that for scale pay. Like,
jeez.
So I stopped acting because I realized like what I wanted as a woman to put out in the world was not a, you know, at that point I was brunette victim who has to go into the police station. And I just didn't want to do that.
And that's true. That's like every part.
Yeah. I didn't want to do, oof. I didn't. And so that's when I started going into journalism and broadcast. And I realized I loved learning. I loved being on set. I loved taking information and making it digestible, either in newsprint or in broadcast. And my goal was always to have a science show, always, 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 from early on. And the TV show, the cooking show, was a fluke because I was applying for jobs at Discovery and looking for like science show hosting gigs. And I saw a posting that was looking for two people to host a travel and a food show. And my friend Georgia and I had filmed this thing but never put it online. It was a farcical, like a comedy video about a fake drink. And my friend Peter Atencio, who went on to direct like Key and Peele, and he's an amazing Comedy Central director. At the time, he was just our buddy. And we're like, can we give you a pizza? Will you make this? So we put it online. That video went viral. And then Food Network did see it. And we got offered a show and a contract.
And
so,
what was the drink that made on?
I'm so worried that if I die tragically and young and like prematurely, that this is going to make its way into a funeral montage. I just want to put it out there. Please don't put the McNuggetini in my funeral montage if I die early.
Poorly. Did you drink it? I saw the video.
We'd never drank it until we were on camera. I mean, it was a farce. It was like this.
But you did drink it on camera?
It's disgusting. I mean,
of course it's disgusting.
It's a milkshake spiked with vodka, rimmed in barbecue sauce and garnished with a chicken nugget. I mean, it was a farcical joke about craft cocktails, but Food Network tapped us to make a bunch of, they're like, this is silly and you guys have great chemistry. So,
yeah.
So I was wanting to get into doing something creative with science or with nature. And then it was like, quick, sharp turn. Can you become this? So I learned a lot about mixology and about presenting. And I've been doing in that as well for a couple of years. But then I got offered this science show and I've been doing both for the last 8 months. And
that's
I have
awesome.
Not been sleeping much.
And yeah, exactly. You work too. Like you work a lot. You're never, we always want to hang out. And then it's like, oh, she's out of town. And yeah, that's part of the work that we both do. I'm about to leave actually on Monday and I'll be gone most of February for a new gig that I got, but it's great. It's like when that happens, you get really excited. And it's great to see because the CBS show that you do, Innovation Nation, is like almost all travel based, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all travel.
Yeah. That's great though. I love it. I don't know. Yeah. I love it.
It's
I love it until I don't anymore, you know?
Yeah. I love it a lot. There are parts of it that, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. So there are parts of it that like, I just have dreams about having a house and like a dog.
Like roots.
You know what I mean? So, but I'm about to wrap the season. So
you can have a dog. You can have a dog. You just see.
Can I have Killer?
That's what I was going to say. Like I have Killer and Killer's great. You can have a dog because we have a Tegan.
That's true.
And Tegan loves Killer. And Tegan will watch Killer for me. And she's very good at it.
This is
and
life
it makes
altering.
Me very happy.
BRB getting a dog. I'm very lucky to do what I do.
And I love that because it's such, like you were saying, the paths are really divergent, but in a lot of ways they come back together because the truth is when it comes to television, whether we're talking about science TV or cooking TV, the number one rule is that it has to be really entertaining. And you, I think of all of my friends, are literally the most entertaining person I know. You make me so happy. You were saying earlier that you're kind of self-deprecating with the Nerd Brigade. And I love it when people can do self-deprecating charm really well.
Why, and you, you
own that shit. You're just so fun. And it's, I don't even like, I hate to dissect comedy because when you start dissecting comedy, it's like not funny anymore. But you definitely have this way about you when we're all in the room where I can't, I just laugh. Like, and sometimes it's just like shit that you're saying that it's just because of the way that you say things. I don't think you're doing it for the laugh. Like, you're not doing it for me.
Probably not.
But you just have a really funny, like, way that you word things sometimes that that kills me.
Thank you.
It's the best.
It's funny for me to come in into part of the Nerdy Brigade. Whenever we're together, I'm always like, I always feel like this weird interloper that's like,
which is so what are you guys weird doing? I've never even though course I know I've never not. Seen you that way. Yeah, and you're not that way. But you're like our super funny friend. Like, it's the best. Because everybody in the Nerd Brigade is smart and everybody has skills and everybody's warm and everybody's friendly and amazing. But like, there are different roles in the Nerd Brigade. You know what I mean? Like Phil is like the one who looks like he's chiseled out of marble. Christina too, by the way. Oh. Phil and Christina are incredibly attractive humans.
Yeah, it's unsettling, really.
Actually, everybody in the Nerd Brigade is like weirdly like really attractive.
We're so amazingly
but shallow. They're like not human. Like, no, they're ridiculous. You fucking kill me every time we hang out. I've never hung out with you and not like felt like I peed a little.
Why, thank you. I really just want to make people urinate. And I think that's what I'm here for. You did seat me in front of this foam microphone that looks like a big red clown nose. Uh-huh. That's a foam cover on the microphone. And I'm like, is that supposed to go on my face? But yeah, I don't know. I do want to take some credit for being called the Nerd Brigade on accident. But yes. In that email about Valentine's last year where I was trying to rally some people to come and hang out and talk about, insect rape, I was like, can I get a brigade of nerds together?
Oh,
and then it became the Nerd Brigade.
I love that. And you also gave everybody in the Nerd Brigade epic nicknames.
Yeah, but you know what mine is?
Ham Jams.
It's the worst.
It's so good.
I didn't even give myself a good one.
Is that, but why ham? Did you also make a ham drink?
I blended ham and I drank it. I'm so glad you don't know that about me. I mean, a ham daiquiri.
I mean, I know about the chicken nugget. That's martini. Is that a martini? But the ham is a daiquiri.
Yeah. It was. I think it was
so gross.
It was either Allie. Ham jams. I know it is. I'm.
Or
I know it
jammers?
Is. It was going to be either ham jams or pork vortex, and I'm glad that I stuck with ham jams.
I love ham jams. You gave me a couple options, and I don't remember all of them now. But we went with MC Knowledge Drop mostly because it makes me feel awesome.
You are MC Knowledge
Drop. It makes me feel so awesome.
You're rocking.
There's so
the
many
mic.
Good ones. There's so many good ones. Okay, it's almost time to go. I end every podcast with the same two questions, and they're kind of a bummer, and I'm like laughing right now, so I'm super...
No, I love it.
I'm like mad at myself for asking you these two questions. But we'll start it with the real bummer one, which is, mm-hmm. when you look to the future, what makes you most nervous?
What makes... overpopulation.
Okay.
I grapple with that. I've grappled with that since I was in high school about whether or not I personally feel like I should reproduce and whether or not I have a right to put more people on the planet. And now I'm like in my, later 30s, mm-hmm. late-ish 30s. And I worry about that all the time. I was on like a second date the other night and like my fertility was in question. And I was like, check, please.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this guy was asking me like whether or not I wanted to have kids, if I thought I could, why I hadn't.
How old was he?
Like early 30s.
Really? That's weird. Because I was going to say, it gets to the point I feel like in LA when dating, especially guys in their 40s, late 30s to mid 40s, it's a different vibe. 30s, they usually just want to hit it and quit it. That's weird to me. Like early 30s. But a lot of times older guys, that's when they start like, I want a family. And you're what? I just met you.
And I exactly that. I mean, but you know what? I'm glad I'm not a bat. I'm glad I'm not a bat bug. Let's just say that. I'm glad I don't have like I'm not wearing some medallion that's just like a big bronze vagina on my neck. Just get it here.
Just get it over
just
with
here.
So I can go home.
The guy next to me is wearing a better bronze vagina. Like, God damn it. I'm going to get one of those.
This whole podcast is just like me laughing. It's just like a track of me laughing. So what are you most hopeful about? Do you want to get into the overpopulation?
No. I worry about that. I just worry that we're just I remember studying like population growth curves and like deer and
scary.
And you get to the part of the curve is so steep, the only thing that can happen is a drop off. And I'm like, y'all, we're right there.
Yeah, we're about to go extinct.
Yeah, but still my Facebook feed is like, we're pregnant, we're having twins, and it's just like, and in my age, people are asking me that. And that's one thing that I grapple with on a personal level and also on like a global survival level.
I get that. Like, I don't think that I want just in case if you guys were wondering, I don't think I, well, I know I don't want to physically like make children because the idea of that feels like traumatic, like that's a traumatic experience to me.
I think it is.
Yeah. I don't want that at all. And so I think that like, but I also for that very same reason, like I'm not going to tell other people what to do. Although I think you should either do replacement or reduction. Like don't make three babies if there's two of you. That's what contributes to population growth.
Well, like, I mean, you know, and generations are living longer. So it's
exactly
it's that too.
It's like, replace yourself or make less is my advice. Mm-hmm. I think I will be one of those people who makes none. And maybe I'll want to adopt some kids. There's a lot of kids who don't have mommies and daddies.
I know. That's what I'm saying is I think I'm just going to launch a site called eBaby. And you just can go on and order one. Because it's like I had this in my garage. I don't even want it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I'll take it off your hands.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. Maybe I'll. I don't know what I'm going to do. But it's one thing that I that twists my guts like every day. One thing I'm hopeful about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I'm going to get a dog. No. One thing I'm hopeful about.
Can your dog play with Killer? By the
yes.
way, because Killer needs a friend.
They're going to be BFFs.
Okay, good. Sorry.
To the max.
Sorry to interrupt.
One thing I'm most hopeful for, and I feel like I thought about this on the way over because I know these questions were coming. I think. I'm hopeful for the way we catalog species and the way that we share that information. I mean, you think back, oh my gosh, you think back 20, 30 years ago, like not having a database of what animals are out there and how many are there.
Yeah,
and
specimens in museums scattered across the globe.
Yeah, so at least with technology, I hope it will allow scientists to better share and catalog and monitor and give more importance to. I mean, I guess that's a naturalist in me, but
yeah. And in doing that, hopefully, then the public realizes like how fucking much amazing biodiversity there is, and they don't keep taking big dumps on it.
I hope so. I hope people stop dumping on my beetles. But which, by the way, one thing that really inspired me to love insects so much too is that, have you ever heard that quote? A theologian was asked if they could infer anything about the existence of God through their a theologian asked a biologist if they can infer anything about the existence of God through their actual studies. And he said, the only thing I know is that if God exists, he has an inordinate fondness for beetles. Because there are more beetles on the planet. Like there's something like 4,000 mammal species, but like 400,000 beetle species. There's more beetles.
That's amazing.
The amount of beetles we have on the planet doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. And they're like all over the place. Like they're amazing. Sure. There's like giant beetles that are like the size of your hand with like rhinoceros horn looking things. And then there's beautiful little glittery, pearlescent, amazing beetles.
They're wonderful. But I just love the idea of some dusty guy in a robe and like a beard are like dumb idea of like what a god is, and he just cannot stop making beetles. He just has an inordinate.
Kind of pink.
And they're like, you only got 17 raccoons. And you're like, don't worry about it. And he's just compulsively making new beetles. Like, I love the idea that, like, if we have a god, like, anything about genocide, human nature, weather,
he can't pay attention to it because he's just too just into the like, beetles right now.
He's got, like, a holy boner for beetles.
He's like, this one pushes little balls of poop around.
Can't stop making
it's
them.
Amazing.
I mean, I don't know. And yeah.
That makes me so happy.
No, I love it. To me, it's really, and I feel the same way about cars. Cars, I feel like, are genus and species and they evolve. And I feel the same way about like beetles and bugs as I do about like cars. It's so interesting to me.
Well, there's a car called a beetle.
There you go.
What?
There you go.
That just happened.
Anyway.
You guys, Allie is so funny. I'm and sorry. You have to download her podcast, her and George's podcast, Allie and George's Slumber Party. Mm-hmm. You also have to watch Unique Sweets on the Cooking Channel, and you have to watch Innovation Nation on CBS on Saturday mornings. Aww. And that's what they have to watch and listen to, right?
That's what they have to do, and they have to tweet photos at me of bugs.
And also baby animals, because she's really into that.
Yo, if you're having a bad day, I'm going to text you a picture of a baby animal.
Yeah, it's kind of my favorite thing. Like, she always cheers me up with that. So where can people... So those are the three shows that people can watch because you're so fucking busy. You're a busy lady. Where else can people... Where can they tweet you? Where can they find you? Where can they read more about what you do?
Oh, I'm at Allie Ward across all platforms. It's A-L-I-E-W-A-R-D, just one L. I'm on Instagram a lot, posting pictures sometimes of teepees, sometimes of caterpillars. sometimes in a stupid cocktail dress, making a dumb drink, and or at the museum. So, yeah, you can find me and
if you ever have a bug that you're like, what is this? Like, tweet it at me.
Oh, yeah. She'll identify faster than, like, Phil the entomologist. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm pretty obsessed.
Yeah, we have a lot of text threads of like, Allie, what is this bug? I found it on my shoe.
I'm very godlike in that way.
More beetles, please. All right. Well, I've got to say thank you so much for joining me. This was so much fun.
Oh, I loved it.
Yay. And everybody else, thanks for dropping in. I'm really looking forward to the next time we get together to talk nerdy.